the ubu means the thing that makes the root what it is. So Ugandans are Ugandans because they come from Uganda. People are people because of Ubuntu.
So why should it be that you and I should get along so awfully? So hello everybody, here we are again. We've recorded some silence for the last time this year.
How sad.
And it's not sad at all. It's, you know, it's just the natural circle of life, the ebb and flow. You know, you can mourn the passing of 2014, but just around the corner, just over the brow of that hill.
You've just saved me from jumping off that bridge, Andrew.
Beyond the well far done. Off horizon, over the other side of the bridge, there's 2015 to look forward to.
Yes.
But before then, there's the Linux Voice Podcast, Season 2, Episode 23.
Where's Leonard Puttering?
I don't know, but there's a ladybird on your microphone stand, Mike. Look at that.
There really is as well, wow. Listeners.
Wow.
This is a sign.
What have you done to Leonard?
Well, he's still trying to work on System D there, despite his lack of opposable digits. So. Whatever ladybirds have.
One of the most disappointing things I found while Christmas shopping this year. So I'm posting on Reddit that on Amazon you can buy, I think it's 10,000 ladybird eggs to sort of distribute amongst, well, wherever you want. And then in the new year you get thousands and thousands of ladybirds. But it's only available on Amazon.com, not on Amazon.co.uk. So I couldn't get thousands of ladybird eggs.
Did you have a practical joke planned or something?
I really dislike
ladybirds. They stink.
Well, there's one
they
in your stink. House.
Yeah, they do.
Just there? I can't smell anything, and it's on my microphone.
Well, if you attack it, then they kind of... try attacking it.
That's what you're going wrong.
I can't help attacking them, and I close the window, and they happen to be in between the window frame. And the window.
So, still to come, there's some Linux and free software related content.
Are you sure?
There'll be the news. We have finds of the fortnight. Do we have any neurons to speak?
No, nobody's got any neurons left.
Sadly. And we have a voice of the masses, which I should probably look at sometime in the next 45 minutes. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Graham Morrison.
And I'm Ben Everard.
And together we are the Linux Voice team. As well as this podcast, we also produce a lovely magazine, which you can buy at shop.linuxvoice.com. And also, we don't need to buy it. It's the season of Christmas, so we should stop being so graspingly capitalistic, because that's what Christmas is all about. So actually, just go to linuxvoice.com and read some of our many, many, many free articles and stuff that we've put up there.
Download issue one.
Yeah.
Issue 2 will be available in about a week.
Yes, as well.
And this probably goes out on the Thursday. Issue 11 does go on sale today, so it's worth saying that.
Yeah.
Just before Christmas, if you're needing some reading material. Glossy cover.
I think we've worked out, or Ben has worked out, that one way or the other, Linux Voice Issue 1 is probably the most read Linux magazine in existence, because it's all over the internet and on the Pirate Bay and archive.org.
We're not on the Pirate Bay anymore.
No.
Nobody's on the Pirate Bay anymore. Maybe pirates are.
Maybe.
Great.
Does that bring us on to the news?
That does bring us on to the news. It's not a neat segue, more of a rough, jarring transition.
Well, to ease the transition slightly, as Mike gets savaged by a ladybird.
No, it attacked me. Help. Oh, it's going towards Andrew now. No, it's coming back to me.
It's okay, they rarely bite.
No, I'm worried about the smell now.
So welcome to the Ladybird Voice Podcast.
Maybe it's got a discovery, I mean a find.
So first up on the news, the Pirate Bay is no more. The website famous for being blocked in the UK and letting people in freer countries download whatever they wanted has been taken down by a Swedish police raid. Or raid by Swedish police. It's been...
I thought they had like servers everywhere.
Well, they were planning on putting them on drones and flying them around so they couldn't be taken down. Evidently, that never happened.
Drones with everlasting batteries.
Well, it could have been like the American planes with the nukes in the Cold War. So they had like several, but always one was always flying, and another one would take off before one landed.
So that sounds massively inefficient. Global warming is probably, entirely due to the Cold War.
They might, yeah.
If it exists, that is. It's just a theory, kids.
They've done remarkably well to survive this long, and I suppose it's a huge, deep subject, isn't it? Because many of the people responsible for it have gone to prison or served time. People, you know, went to prison for their principles of a free internet and people being free to do whatever they want. But I think it's inevitable that the might of the law would come down on the Pirate Bay at some point.
Yeah, it almost seems like a bit of a hollow victory for the law at this point.
But any kind of chasing of copyright infringers is going to be a hollow victory.
But if it had happened years earlier, then this would have had an effect. Now everyone just goes to a different website to download.
Yeah, but it happened like with things like eMule and all those kind of...
Oh, yeah.
All the letters that people got sent. You know, these things have happened time and time again. And, you know... It doesn't surprise any of us that it has no effect on the amount of copyrighted material that is copied.
Well, hasn't another site, it might be kickass.to, haven't they basically taken an archive of all the torrents, which is only something like 80 megs, actually, it turns out, of all the BitTorrent files, and they've just put them back up. So I've heard, I've not looked at it.
It's ISO Hunt.
Oh, it's ISO Hunt, is it? Yeah. Right, yeah.
It was blocked last week in the UK. Other countries may have access to it.
Is that for anti-terrorist reasons?
Yes, yeah, it's to stop the terrorists.
It's from stopping us downloading the Anarchist Cookbook. Yes, because nobody knows how to use Usenet.
I remember I used to have a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook.
I had Jolly Roger's cookbook on the Amiga. Was that something different? Or?
Was that the Blue Peter annual?
There's a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook at the bar in my local pub.
Is there? Oh. I never realised it was an actual print thing.
Well, maybe they just printed it out.
Yeah, maybe.
Terror cell in York.
That kill the trees. It is big news, I guess, but time watch.
Yeah, big news, I guess, but only in the way that it's not really news.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it's not news is significant because, you know, the information is probably ambivalent about being free, but it's free whether or not it wants to be or not.
Yeah. I didn't ever agree with the Pirate Bay being blocked in the UK. I mean, I used to quite like reading the comments on the Pirate Bay. They were quite amusing.
Yeah, no one put a comment on the Linux Voice Torrent. I was a bit disappointed. A lot of people downloaded it, a few thousand downloads, I think.
But, so this is free anyway, so download it from the Pirate Bay.
Yeah.
To help save our bandwidth costs.
Maybe I should have put in the description that I'd stolen it from some server somewhere. Leak. Grab it quickly before it's taken down.
Leaked. Archive it. Jennifer Lawrence's favourite Linux magazine.
I'll do that for issue two.
Next time.
An ISO
50,000 downloads.
So move on to more Linux-related news. Fedora 21 has come out.
Yeah, that's big news as well. Unfortunately, I haven't tried it, so it's difficult for me to comment on it. But I've seen that lots of people like it.
Yeah, it does seem... I also haven't tried it. I spent this week installing Fedora 1 instead.
How did you do that?
It works with Qemu.
Okay.
It wouldn't work in VirtualBox. It wouldn't recognise the SATA hard drives or virtual hard drives. But on Qemu, you can emulate IDEs.
You might be able to do that in VirtualBox as well, but you probably need to create brand new drives and it can be a bit...
I don't know, because there is a command line access to VirtualBox, which might give you more options. In the GUI one I had, it wouldn't let you create an IDE.
Oh, really? Okay.
Or maybe I just couldn't work out how to do it.
So why did you install Fedora 1?
I'm going through looking at historical versions of Linux. We looked at Mint 1
last month
and Fedora 1 this month.
When was Fedora 1 released?
2003.
Right.
Wow.
The weirdest thing about using it is I completely forgot it uses Mozilla rather than Firefox.
I guess it's pre-Firefox or Phoenix time.
Yeah, Firefox hadn't reached version 1 yet, but it was about. It took me a long time to switch from Mozilla to Firefox. I really liked it, and I've never felt the same way about Firefox that I felt about Mozilla. I don't know why. Buttons are too small, I think.
You should just use SeaMonkey then. I mean, SeaMonkey is basically the old Mozilla suite, but
yeah, maybe I should.
Maybe you should. Did you try and browse the web then much on this ancient?
I did actually. LinuxVoice.com doesn't work. I don't think it recognises it. I don't know what time CSS came out, but it certainly doesn't recognise most of it.
Right.
The Fedora website did work, actually.
That's pretty cool. That's backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
So you could download Fedora 2 then.
Yeah.
Upgrade.
I remember back in the old days when we used to work, when I used to work on the old magazine, we did a What on Earth on CSS. Wow. So CSS has definitely been invented in my lifetime.
Okay.
That was maybe, what, 2004,
2005? I'm sure CSS dates back longer than that, to the late 90s, but it took a long time for browsers to start implementing it to any sensible level.
Yeah. I don't know how much it's changed as well between early CSS. I've only really used CSS 3.
So back to Fedora 21 then, which is the news.
Yes.
As we're in the news section.
Yes.
Is what's new about Fedora 21? Or does nobody know because nobody uses Fedora on the Linux Worst team?
Isn't it like the first one with like workstation version and server version? And
no, Fedora 1 has that.
What? Well, during the installation.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But isn't this the first one where you've got different sort of installation media? If I'm wrong, then everybody will be laughing at me.
No, you are right. It does come out. And it might even have a cloud version as well.
Exactly, yeah. I'm sure they split them up for this release. It might have been the last release, but I'm pretty sure it's...
I mean, there's also... I mean, Fedora has, as I'm sure you know as well, remixed versions of Linux and created new install stuff. The Fedora Kickstuff stuff makes it really easy. You can create a file which basically tells it all the packages you want to install, press go, and it will create a nice little live CD for you.
That's supposed to always been one of the big features of Anaconda, hasn't it? They're in Red Hat and Fedora installer, yeah. I really like the Fedora distro. I just simply don't use it because I tend to use Ubuntu-based distros or Debian-based distros as my main driver, as the cool kids say, and then Arch Linux in a VM just for masochism. I mean, you know, because it's great.
Yeah, I've always used Debian based on my laptop and CentOS or Red Hat based on servers, not for any real reason.
Well, CentOS is supported for like 10 years, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, but so is Ubuntu server, isn't it?
It's probably similarly long, isn't it? We'll all be dead by then, so yeah.
How does GNOME feel? Because the thing you can rely on with Fedora is it always has the very latest version of GNOME.
Well, in GNOME, I think it was 2.34. It feels surprisingly familiar. I'm not a big fan. It's got the old chunky icon. Oh, you mean Fedora 21?
Yeah, I did mean that, but it's still. I still remember the old brown envelope kind of folder icons and stuff from the old version. That felt very kind of SGI or something like that. Or
Blue Curve was the theme, I think. Yeah. I thought it was quite pretty at the time. It's quite colourful. And
yeah, I mean, it wasn't that far removed, really, from like Atari ST days, was it? That's how I remember it.
I mean, I haven't actually used
the 21.
Yeah, but I did use a recent version of GNOME. I think it was 3.16, so not the very latest, but I quite liked it. Not enough to switch permanently, but it's a lot better than the early 3.2 days. Moving on to some news I have actually used. Canonical have released Ubuntu Core with the snappy package manager with one package.
Wow, Vim? That's all anybody needs.
Docker. And then through Docker you can install all sorts of stuff, really. And the idea of this is it's for spinning up cloudy stuff and whatnot. They make a big deal of this thing called transactional updates and transactional packages, which means that you can just roll forward and backwards and all sorts of stuff.
It's just deltas that they're dealing with, isn't it?
Yeah, so you can't fail halfway through an install, basically. That's what makes it transactional. And it does this by having, it's a bit weird, it has a read-only sort of root file system.
Yeah, yeah.
So nothing touches like the heart of it, and then sort of stuff fills in around the sides. So in principle, you should always have this working system and then just...
It sounds quite similar to what Leonard was talking about with his BTRFS package management. Do you remember?
Yes, we interviewed Leonard...
For the last podcast.
Yeah, we spoke to him in the podcast, of course.
This is Leonard Pertering, lead developer of Systemd.
Yeah. Systemd, Pulse Audio, Avahi, and who's now trying to shake up packaging, yes. We had him on the last podcast, of course, but we also did a much more extensive interview with him, which will be in Linux Voice issue 12. And he was talking about this as well. I mean, everybody's crazy about Docker and containers at the moment. To me, I can see the benefits, but there's a lot of waste that goes on bundling everything with everything.
But it's a security thing, isn't it? That's the big thing for Canonical as well, is that because that part of the file system is read-only, you know for absolute certain that there's this kind of base setup that is, you know, bulletproof.
It won't be broken, and then you use BTRFS mounts on top of that.
So you can go backwards or forwards through everything else that you install on top of that to make sure that you've got a secure system.
And by installing stuff, it's not like a package in the traditional sense, or in many ways it is, but it's also you'd package up your own server. So if we could, for instance, package up linuxvoice.com into a Docker thing and then throw it up on hundreds of servers, so when the feds come and take us down, the Swedish police raise
raid our headquarters. Are we hosting the Pirate Bay now? Yeah. Cool.
ISO hunt will benefit.
Yeah. They'll just be able to spin up our Docker container on ISO hunt.
I think it makes sense. I just reading about it, it seems to be a bit like when XML was all the rage and people were using it for everything regardless of whether it made sense or not. And everybody's going container mad at the moment. But
you're telling us about Lennart's package manager using BTRFS.
Well, yeah, he put forward this proposal and he talked about it in the interview that we'll print. It's similar in terms of separating applications from one another so you can run untrusted code. And Lennart's idea is that everything can have should have a runtime it can run against, so a certain set of libraries that will always be installed. So you don't have all the different distributions have different library versions compiled with different compilers and different locations, and he has this idea of these runtimes that you can target, but
taking advantage of things like the copy on write features of ButterFS.
ButterFS, is that how you're supposed to say
that? Is how you're supposed to say
really
it.
Oh well, I'm so out of the loop. I hereby hand in my geek card.
I only know that because a long time ago I interviewed Valerie Aurora, who worked on a lot of the code for ButterFS.
Oh wow.
The thing I don't like about ButterFS is it's short for BTreeFS, and to me BTreeFS is actually easier to say than ButterFS, which is supposed to be an abbreviation of it.
Yeah.
That's a point.
It's also pronounced GIF.
I think it's a really good move by Canonical, and it looks like a really strong product. I mean, for them to kind of, they'd say leverage their position in the cloud, but I mean, they're really being quite aggressive in trying to stake their claim on and the many instances of their operating system that are currently used at Google. And did you see the press release had a great load of blurb from Microsoft who said, "Oh, we love Linux."
Well, it's still in beta at the moment. They only gave you two ways of trying it. One was an image to download and run against KVM locally. The other was Azure. You could click a button and spin up a version in Microsoft's Azure cloud.
Is that because Microsoft are perhaps the only people willing to pay Canonical for the instances that they spin up?
I suspect that could be the case, but I don't know.
I was just going to say, it's a fascinating world we're in now, isn't it? So many people using Linux VMs on Microsoft's cloud, so much that the company's saying we love Linux.
Yeah. You said you'd used it?
Yeah, I did.
So did you just spin up the KVM instead?
Yeah.
And I mean, how does it feel? Do you still apt-get stuff, or is it a step beyond all that?
Snappy, you snappy install stuff. And to be honest, it's still
snappy
quite
install
limited.
Docker, and then
exactly
carry on from Docker.
Well, then you can use Snappy to install stuff through Docker.
Okay.
At least I think that was what was happening. I only poked it a bit. I got confused when I couldn't apt-get anything. But Snappy, it's another quite interesting, and Mark Shuttleworth talked about this quite a bit on the video where he presented it, that Snappy is based on Clicky, I think, which is the package manager they developed for Ubuntu Phone. And it's actually, they're very closely linked, this server OS and the phone OS.
Right.
Because at a low level, they've got very similar requirements in terms of...
isolating things and,
exactly. So an app on a phone is very similar to a sort of server thing, really.
Yeah. It's actually quite meaningful consolidation then. Everybody talks about it and, you know, throws that buzzword around, doesn't it?
Go and say it. Say synergy.
Oh, no. Never.
Let's all say it together. Doesn't that reinforce the value of it?
Let's leverage our something.
Let's leverage our synergy.
So, more synergy.
Can I try something whimsical?
Go on then.
That brings us to halfway through the news. Still to come. More news.
Good signposting there. I see you've done media training before.
Thanks for that synergy, Andrew. Next up in the news, Pirate Bay, now we've done that one. Raspberry Pis are going into space again, but this time into proper space.
What was it before?
Sort of upper atmosphere.
Real man space.
So let's just remind the listeners that when that bloke, that Austrian bloke, jumped out of space, Ben was not impressed.
Well, it's not space.
Did he have a Raspberry Pi?
No, he didn't.
It wasn't space. It looked like space to me.
There's no real point where space begins, basically. The atmosphere continues to get thinner and thinner and thinner. And
where does space end, Ben?
How, if you could measure space, how big would it be?
So, describe it in a sound.
I've forgotten where I was now.
Raspberry Pi's are going into space.
Yeah,
sorry.
So there's no point where space... Yeah, some guy has basically decided that space begins, I think it's 100 miles above the surface of the Earth. That's entirely arbitrary. He's just gone, that's pretty high, and a round number will go with that. So yeah, obviously if you can send a balloon there, it's not real space. There's got to be an atmosphere, otherwise the balloon wouldn't float up
there.
That's
true.
But anyway, they're going to the space station, which is low Earth orbit, which is...
That's that actual space. Yeah.
Otherwise, they couldn't call it a space station.
I mean, it's high Earth orbit.
Yeah, they have to do, what is it, orbit boost periodically.
But isn't low Earth orbit that all those bodies in those orbit are falling? It's just the moving of the Earth and the...
Well, isn't that technically what orbiting is?
Yes,
just
it is.
Falling in a circle.
That's what it is in Frontier, Elite 2.
Yeah, but what about like Voyager? That's not in any kind of orbit or...
Yeah, once you're out, if you're in orbit and spinning roundy, you're falling. You're constantly accelerating.
So what about planets that are in orbit around the sun? Are they in real space?
Yeah, yeah. They're in real space.
Right on, Commander.
I wonder if it says that in Elite Dangerous. Find out next episode, after Graham's played it non-stop for 2 weeks. But isn't it like, so this is a competition open for kids, I think, isn't
yes.
it? Maximum 15. Because I was really looking forward to writing some
only
assembly
kids
nonsense.
Can apply.
It's primary. There's two categories. One for primary school kids where they don't actually write the code. They come up with these ideas and then the Raspberry Pi Foundation write the code.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And then there's secondary school kids where I think the kids are in, they're supposed to write it, but I think if they have problems, then I assume Ben Nuttall will finish it off for them.
But you don't want something maxing up the CPU up there, do you? It's like,
well, you're just trying to get in the assembly, aren't you?
I'd love to write something, a Bitcoin mining machine in space. That would be pretty cool. Wouldn't be very useful.
Tax that, Cameron.
Yeah, we should put our server up there.
It's not a bad idea. Because is it which way around is it with relativity? Is it deep down, closer to the source of gravity, the clocks go slightly slower, or is it in space? It's in space, isn't it?
There goes, yeah.
So you could do Bitcoin mining in space and get a few extra cycles.
Brilliant.
But on your Raspberry Pi.
So if you're a school child in the UK, try and get stuff written on space. And they're sending a Brit up there with two Raspberry Pis in his pockets.
And a USB hub.
And a USB hub.
A good one, I hope. What is the voltage on the ISS? 110?
Well, do you reckon it's two parts? If you plug into the American half, it's 110.
Yeah, you're right. Depends which bit you're in.
Do you reckon the ESA is going up with, so does that mean it has to be 230 or 240?
220.
220,
They better take the right plug adapters as well.
So, yeah, I mean, you can do stuff like poke it out the window and sort of see the Earth as it goes past. They're developing a special add-on board with stuff, I forget exactly what, accelerometers and the like, that you can play with. We're supposed to be getting hold of one to play with.
What, a Pi kitted out with this space station stuff?
I assume they're only sending us the space station stuff, the Astro Pi board.
I see, right, yeah.
They've said they'll try and get it distributed before Christmas. Awesome. I don't know.
Cool.
That'd be brilliant.
Yeah. And they will be available to buy, but if you are a competing child, you can try and win one. I think the best, so however many, get the bit of the hardware. My phone's turned itself off. Right, final news item of the fortnight. Microsoft fights the US government. This is the US government's order that they have to hand over data stored in Ireland, claiming that because they're an American company, they have to comply with American laws, even in their Irish operations. Which is kind of, this sort of thing's been going on for a while, because the EU now says that Google have to respect their right to be forgotten, even outside of the EU. And I think a Canadian court has ordered Google to do something worldwide, maybe remove results to something. I should have read this beforehand, really. But anyway, various governments are claiming they can force companies to do stuff worldwide rather than just within their jurisdictions. And Microsoft and a load of other companies are trying to fight it through the American courts.
It's just made me think of like the stickers that we got when we went to the Free Software Foundation Europe, Graham, and they were handing out these stickers that said there's no such thing as the cloud. It's just your data on other people's computers. And, you know, it's becoming increasingly like that. We're all using cloud services more and more. And so the world is becoming a lot more globalized in that sense as well, not just some trade of, you know, actual objects, but data is being spread everywhere.
Yeah, and it's expanding much faster than the legal framework for it.
Exactly, yeah.
And what the right rules are, who you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to follow, yeah. It's just not clear at all. And it seems like, you know, certain countries have sort of set themselves up as places as friendly to cloud companies, like Ireland, because they're low tax rate.
Luxembourg.
And I really feel that these countries have a responsibility. They're getting the money from hosting the companies. They should be the ones stepping up and creating solid legal frameworks and properly implemented, you know, data protection as well, and actually chasing it through.
But they have no motivation to do that.
No, they don't. Well, if you don't do it, Ireland, I'm coming for you. Yeah. Now they've got some motivation.
What is the corporation tax rate in Ireland?
10%, I believe.
10%, wow.
Yes.
So every time I phone at PayPal, I always get a call centre in Ireland. Always makes me feel a warm glow that, you know, part of our profit is going to a low tax haven operating on the fringes of legality. with their dodgy data laws. Yeah, so that's only going to go one way, isn't it? That Microsoft is going to win, of course.
Are they?
Yeah.
I don't think they will. I think the governments, they're becoming hell-bent on having control over everything.
Yeah, I don't see them winning here.
Even though they've got all the money?
Well, the government has more money.
Obviously. Oh, yeah. I forgot, the US government.
Yes, the Irish government.
Right, yes. Sorry, yeah, they're going to win.
Yes. Anyway, that's the news this fortnight.
Nice news.
Fabulous. That's something of a record at 22 minutes.
Was it only 22 minutes?
Well, actually, it's 29, but I don't know when I started recording.
That's relatively snappy, I think.
We must have missed something really important.
It was good, though. It was worth it. There was some very, you know, how big is space? You can't skip over questions like that.
Even Patrick Moore couldn't really answer it, no.
So that brings us on to finds of the fortnight.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, usual excuses. Does anyone want to go first?
Can I go first, please?
Yes, yeah, because you didn't do one last time.
No, I didn't, so I've made up for it by having more than one. My find, first of my finds is that there's a Mormon temple in Harrogate, which I drove past the other day on my way to Preston. And it's there, it looks all temple-y, and it says, you know, give us your money, oh, come all ye faithful. And at first I thought that was just because Harrogate's fairly affluent and the Mormons seem to want to have a, you know, spiritual affiliation with people with lots of money. But I realised there's also a big American air base near there. So the two go hand in hand.
I was watching a documentary about the Mormons last night, actually. And yeah,
are you converted?
Oh, completely. They sent their, when people, they spend 2 years knocking on people's doors, and that's called their missionary work, and they have to go to training for that, and they sent the people to training in Leeds, which surprised me a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And they had, like, yeah, a little Mormon college. I don't know what they teach you about there.
I'm always disappointed that Mormon temples don't look like Mexican temples on top of pyramids and things. That's how I expect
them. The titty twister.
Yeah. Because that's how it sounds like.
That's what Harrogate needs. Yeah. yes, my second discovery. There's a thing going on. We touched on Luxembourg and dodgy tax evasion earlier, tax avoidance earlier. And to crack down on this perfectly legal practice, the government is changing our VAT laws to stop Amazon from basing itself in Luxembourg. And charging customers in the UK VAT, but then only remitting certain part of it to, I don't know, to stop them ripping us off anyway. So the VAT laws are about to get hideously complicated for small businesses, such as us, hooray. But that's by the by, because what it led me to discover is that part of, under the new VAT reporting scheme, you have to put various bits of information into a spreadsheet, which gets uploaded to a certain part of HMRC's online gateway. And you can use, oh, here we go. HMRC will be making the blank template available in Microsoft Excel and Libre OpenOffice formats.
Wow. Ooh. Progress.
So for all that we've heard the Cabinet Office say things like, you know, you must use open formats, for the government to go back over all the old millions and millions of box ticking, form filling in things and replace all those with proper ODF formats must be a pain. But this is a new thing, a new government service that's been unleashed. And yeah, true to their word, they are actually using LibreOffice.
That's excellent.
Yeah. It'll make me feel slightly better.
there's some people still complain that, like, I want it in numeric format or whatever.
Well, it's all the same format. It's all ODS.
Yeah, if it's an open format, it's an open format.
Yeah. So I guess numeric probably can read that anyway now.
Yes. My third thing, discovery, was Pi Wars, which I was at with Ben last week in Cambridge. And the discovery, well, I'd known it was going to happen, but the discovery really was how awesome it was. Find.
It was.
Is that
awesome.
Our Ben or their Ben?
It's our Ben.
Oh, really?
I think their Ben is also our Ben as well. You know, he's got a T-shirt. He'll do. Yeah, I got to meet a few people from the Raspberry Pi Foundation, and Mike and Tim, the two principal chaps who organised it, put in just such a lot of work building assault courses and devising tests and things. And as this was more or less a Robot Olympics style event where there were 20 odd people that had teams that had submitted a robot to be put through its paces, and, you know, there's a 3-point turn and a sumo competition and go around a maze and salt course. And one of the rounds was how clean is the code?
Yes.
Oh,
which I thought was, you know, I'd never think of that. That's so impressive. You know, the depth that they'd gone into while thinking about all the challenges was just amazing. And see, so the creativity of the stuff that the kids, probably dads actually, that the kids had you know, put into making these robots was just great. It was brilliant, and it inspired me. I really want to make a robot for next time.
No. Do you have a Linux voice robot? I could do the voice.
We should do a Linux. We should enter a Linux voice robot next time. That would be great. Those are my finds.
They're good finds.
Don't think I can compete with that.
No, I can't compete with that. How about you, Ben?
I can't compete with that.
Is it time for the halfway reminder?
I can try.
Go on.
I've only just thought of this in like the last few minutes, but here's a question. What is the most expensive man-made thing ever in the history of the world?
Is it printer ink?
Probably. That's probably the second most expensive thing. Man-made thing.
I saw the XKCD on it. They worked out that, I think, putting a man on the moon was almost exactly equivalent to building a pyramid.
Mm.
In terms of man-hours.
I think I remember that, yeah.
Ah, okay.
But if the pyramid was built using slave labour, how does that distort the man-hours?
But
thing?
They weren't. We're built still using paying for slave that. Labour.
Oh, okay.
They were built by willing volunteers.
So the Bible lied?
They weren't building pyramids in the Bible, were they?
Charlton Heston lied.
Ridley Scott lied.
Somebody lied. There's a fort, like one tiny little fort built during the time of Henry VIII that cost something like 1.5 times the England's GDP.
Back then, yeah.
Because it was on mega, mega marshy ground.
Right.
I don't know how else you'd realistically compare other than against national GDP or man hours or something.
That's an interesting point.
Because in actual money terms, then, you know, Avatar's the most brilliant film ever made. Actually, we all know it's Gone with the Wind or Thriller or whatever.
Well, the reason I mention this is because the ISS is supposed to be the most expensive thing ever made. It's an absolutely ridiculous amount of money put into it. But
thing? Is the Roman Empire a thing?
Well, I guess it's a man. It's an object.
Okay. Like,
the Roman Empire was self-funding, though.
Yeah, that's true.
To a point.
But yeah, my other fine, I really need some Linux fines, but we've just been traveling and stuff. Barbie couldn't exist as a human being.
That's that we all, we've known that for ages.
Really? Oh, yeah. I heard it on German radio that if you actually created her, she'd have no space for internal organs. So.
That and she's plastic.
Yeah.
Well, that's true as well, yeah.
And she'd break her leg every time she took a step forward.
What, just because they're so long or...?
Well, yeah, she'd be like 7 foot tall but have only like 3 pounds of muscle mass. So her tibia would shatter.
That's true, yeah. Oh, well, there we go. That's not much of a fine then, is it?
Not bad. My fine was sent to me, and it's Pi-DIO. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's like another replacement for Dropbox, but completely open source. I've not had a chance to try it. I used BitTorrent Sync for a while, and now I've been using OwnCloud for a while, but OverCloud is quite overkill if all you want is to be able to sync some files. So it sounds like a really good alternative, and it's the sixth version, so... Mm. I assume it's quite mature, but I have to give it a go.
What is it, web-based or is it?
Yeah, it is web-based. I assume there's clients for iOS and Android. I don't know if there's a desktop... Oh, there must be a desktop client for Linux because it sounds like it's written in Python.
Okay.
But yeah, that's my find.
Okay. My find is it's another thing, actually. C-File, which everyone... Or whenever people talk about... OwnCloud, someone always pops up and says, oh, you should use C-File. Mm. And I've only ever used OwnCloud. And C-File's just released version 4. So that is one thing I actually haven't found it yet, but it's on my to-do list.
It looks really pretty, the interface does. I mean, OwnCloud's interface has got a lot better. We've just upgraded to a more recent version, haven't we?
But, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, I haven't tried C-File myself, but when I saw the screenshots, it was like it looked a lot more slick and so on. But C-File is all about storage, I think, isn't it? Whereas OwnCloud has got like contacts and you know, editing now, documents and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, yeah, as Mike said, we've just upgraded to OwnCloud 7 on our team site, and... document editing came in OwnCloud 6, and I tried to use it a few times, but it was such a mess. It just got tangled up in itself. It wasn't mature. But actually, I've started using it as my main word processor now, and it so far it's working well. But I've only just started working on this issue, so I haven't done too much writing in it. But it seems to be working well so
far. Does it have a word count feature? I mean,
no, that's the one. It's quite split up, because it also doesn't show you in pages.
Right.
Or, yeah, no pages and no word count.
At least that's pretty much essential for what we do, isn't it?
So. Yeah, I don't know how I'll get around that.
No. It may be straightforward enough to add something.
It might be an interesting challenge, yeah. I mean, it's all written in JavaScript.
It was a separate product, wasn't it? That it was a different company that created
Web ODF or something, wasn't
it? Well, there's a JavaScript ODF. Thing that's open source. I could just run WC on the file and the server.
Yeah.
Have a shell session open.
I get it. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, but it'd be an ODT file, wouldn't it? So you'd have to.
Of course.
It's a zip file which has got loads of XML in it, so it'd have to be quite a cunning command to do
I don't know if there's a command line ODF to text file converter.
There must be.
There must be.
Yeah.
In fact, you can run LibreOffice headless to do it. That would mean installing LibreOffice on the server.
Yeah, that would max out the CPU a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I won't do that. Also, actually, in server-related stuff, we've been running a PWIC, a JavaScript web analytics tool, which is similar to Google Analytics, which is by far the most common web analytics framework, but it's open source, and we run it on our own server, so we can see who's doing what without sending all of our visitors' data to Google. The problem with this is now we put up PDFs on the website, we can't really track how people are coming in from external sites and downloading the PDFs, because that never triggers the JavaScript.
Yeah.
And this isn't necessarily a problem, it's fine, but it's just nice to know how many people are downloading it and that sort of thing. Obviously, it is all stored in the log files. I come across a tool called Go Access, which is it's an ncurses based log file analyzer, I guess. So you can, I actually do it by downloading the log files, but you could run it on the server, and it puts up a nice little ncurses interface, and you can sort of, it's got different views that you can see what's going on your server just through the log files.
Right, so you just pointed at a bunch of Apache log files, and then you get this sort of nice summaries and things.
There's a slight thing that it only works on one file at a time, so you have to cat all your log files together, which is a bit awkward. But other than that, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And it can process. I mean, we have, I can't remember how many million lines there are in our log files, but several. And it can do it all pretty quickly. There's not too much waiting around.
Sounds great.
It just reminded me of, have you finished yours?
Yeah.
It was just the, you reminded me of something I found while I've been soldering a little Raspberry Pi Christmas tree with my daughter. And I wanted the Raspberry Pi to turn on and connect to the internet without having a network cable. And something that she could use. And I really didn't know about this, but there's a tool called WICD hyphen curses for configuring Wi-Fi connections with a decent interface from the command line.
Isn't there a Raspberry Pi specific tool, Wi-Fi menu or something?
Well, this is the one I think it's on. It's actually linked to from the Raspberry Pi's documentation. So maybe that's something that they've updated with this tool.
I think the one you mentioned is quite popular amongst Arch users who are running like tiling window managers. They don't care about network managers.
Because it can be a real pain.
Yeah.
And especially getting the Wi-Fi to automatically connect on the Raspberry Pi, which isn't that tricky, but for most people it's something you do in the dark. You know, you wonder if your configuration has worked, you turn it on, you reboot, have you got network cable installed. Two network connections is always difficult. But with you install this, you know, you choose your access point, you enter your password, you enable start at boot, and you're ready to go.
So. Brilliant.
Hmm. What you need is a system D. That's how I got mine all configured through network D.
Really?
Yeah, did it manually.
That doesn't handle wireless yet, though, does it?
Yeah.
Does it?
Must do. I don't have a wire going into my computer.
Okay. Well, maybe with recent version then, yeah.
This was really annoying. It came with an example config file called my-network. And so I just edited that, as you do. And it just kept spitting out these really weird errors. Turned out the problem is you can't have a hyphen in the file name, but the example file had a hyphen in it.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
Yeah, so obviously Leonard must die.
I've had a similar issue that the root slice, a slice in systemd, is like a group of processors, and
of course it is.
The default one is hyphen dot slice. Now you can't process that using any normal Linux command line tools unless you use two dashes before the file name, which means this is not an option. So when I came across this file, I tried to look at it in less. I tried to copy it. No, all failed. You know, it thought it was the hyphen dot slice was actually an option. So I spent ages and I looked on the internet and it said, so in order to look at it, you have to do less dash dash and then the file name. So it's not interpreted as an option. That for something that's Linuxy and Unixy, that is a completely ridiculous decision. And I'm getting quite like systemd, but things like that just... Yeah, I should have poked Leonard about that.
Or maybe you did.
Yeah, I should point out, network D config did work quite well once I'd found out the errant hyphen.
Yeah. And was this on a Raspberry Pi?
No. This was on Arch on my desktop.
Yeah.
Brilliant. In fact, Arch on a Pi is really good if you want to build your own stuff.
I thought it was fake Arch because it had SSH installed.
Yeah, that's true. That's not Arch.
Yeah. Wusser's Arch.
And they are our finds for our last finds of 2014.
Final find.
Down. Final finds. That leaves us to the halfway.
It's the halfway reminder, isn't it?
Yeah.
As we're 46 minutes into a podcast that we aim to make last about 45 minutes, it's time for the halfway reminder. Still to come, we don't have any neurons.
No, if anybody does want their neurons vocalised, then email me, mike@linuxvoice.com. But no XML, please, and no 500 words.
I've actually, as you said that, I've just received a neuron.
Wow.
Why are you receiving neurons? They hate me.
It's not called a neuron, but it says it's for the podcast, so I'll count that as a neuron.
Synergy,
how did that
again.
It's a large list of URLs, but I'll try and read that one. not very easy to read out, but somebody's, Tim Abel says, I've seen him on Twitter quite a bit, yeah. All right, Tim. He says, afternoon, sir. This might be an interesting topic of conversation for the podcast. Sync thing had a bit of a to and fro with ind.ie about project ownership, etc. All out in the open for all to see. And then he has some links about spat over the fork, changing of stewardship and all this stuff. And put the links in the notes. He says, Sync thing is a fab project and much needed to fight our evil Dropbox/Google/SkyDrive overlords. Could RL turn out to be the Stallman of our time? He's really fighting for modern users' freedoms. All the best. Just signed up for the perpetual direct debit for the Dead Tree version of your fine magazine. That's a new story we didn't mention. We've got direct debit renewals now as well. And we're going to start direct debit subscriptions very soon as well. So people can subscribe quarterly, break down the costs, and just nice and simple. Anyway, right, so I don't really understand what that's all about, Tim, but it sounds pretty cool. So
that's shop.linuxvoice.com, you say, Mike?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I just admitted.
Yeah, so it looks like another thing, because we were talking about the PI, DIO, PDIO, and C file.
The more the merrier.
The sync thing. I think I've seen that spat come up. Arrel is the...
In fact, didn't we feature him in our magazine?
Yeah, we did.
I remember.
In our magazine?
In Linux Voice.
And I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The indie phone.
Yes, that's right. That's it. Oh. Of course.
The next Richard Stallman. That's quite a challenge.
That is.
They've done really well, haven't they? Did they get their...
Yeah, they did.
They exceeded their Kickstarter or Indiegogo.
Yeah, of $100,000.
So, yes, thanks for that, Neuron Tim.
That must mean it's time for Voice of the Masses. Otherwise known as that other thing that we used to call it. What did we used to call it?
Open Ballot.
Open Ballot.
In our previous lives.
Yeah.
They've all been erased from the internet.
That's right. East Asia has always been at war with... probably with East Asia, actually.
Have they... Eurasia and East Asia. Have they been removed from the internet, or is there just so much advertising now you can't see them?
Anyway, 2014 is almost over, and it's been a lovely year. So, what's been good about last year, everybody? We'll go through some of the opinions from the internet. Then we'll go around the table. You know, then we'll come back to the internet to finish things off.
You sound like you really know what you're doing.
Yeah,
it's nice to have you back, Andrew.
Thanks. So, first of all, we've got to get this out of our system, but Javier says, by far Linux Voice is the best thing of 2014. The rest is business as usual.
We didn't ask this question to answer
we
so that people
fishing.
Would say no, we yeah. weren't. We didn't
I didn't even
about
think
it.
About
no,
it. I'm not clever enough
I
to
didn't
do
even
that.
Think about it at all until people started to say.
Stephen Wheeler, Kevin O'Brien, Stuart Ward, Joe Ressington, and eponymous me. All these people think that Linux Voice was a good thing. They're all clearly mentally unwell, so we can ignore them. But Philip says that the final breakthrough for systemd in 2014 might be the most important thing that's happened to FLOSS GNU Linux.
Yeah, I mean, when I was writing this Voice of the Masses, I also wanted it to be what was the most important thing and not just what was your favourite thing as well. So yeah. I don't know if I articulated that specifically well, but yeah, I mean, systemd is obviously... It's there now. It's here to stay, you know.
I think you did articulate that. Or at least,
thank you.
At least judging from Pete's response, he says, Heartbleed. Although bad news, it called our attention to not blindly accept open source alone as a quality mark. Good. The end result was more investment in OpenSSL as well as other projects focusing more on security. Recently, I read about Curl doing just that. It didn't make open source look good, but it made it better.
I think that's a very good point, actually, yeah, because, yeah, a lot of people just assume open source is inherently better, and I mean, I think a lot of time it is, but when you've only got two people looking at monstrously complicated code, then... Code that's used by everyone, and giant companies that don't contribute any money or developer effort back.
So, as you've got that angry face on, Mike, what was your highlight of 2014?
There wasn't a new release of Zed Snares, so I can't really think of...
Was there a new release of Mycos this year?
There was a beta release. Yeah. So
how's
I should,
the testing working out?
Oh, I've got plenty of 14-year-old kids copying and pasting and putting their own names in. Yeah.
You should just add that as a config option.
Type in your name and a website address and it will upload it.
It should be Star OS.
Asterisk. Yeah.
Speaking of file names that you can't enter into anything.
Yes, that will be interesting.
Actually, create this wild tangent. We create the EPUB version of our magazine using a series of bash scripts that pull stuff apart. But every time someone puts an asterisk in the text, it replaces that with every file in the folder that it was running. Obviously, I could fix this, but I just quite like it. It makes me giggle every time I see it. So if you're ever reading the EPUB and just see a massive list of files, it's because I forgot to change it back to an asterisk.
I mean, I think my highlight was actually meeting Leonard Buttering. Turns out he's a thoroughly nice guy, isn't he, Graham?
Yeah, he is a really nice guy.
Yeah. He took us to a pretty cool restaurant, and he didn't pay for the food. We paid for his food, actually, just so people don't think we are corrupt. And yeah, showed us where the East Side Gallery is.
Ethics in Linux journalism.
Wow.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, so.
Sorry, Mike.
That was it, basically.
Graham,
been a good year, hasn't it?
What do you think? Apart from the Linux Voice, obviously.
Well, my highlight, I think, has been the release of Syro by the Aphex Twin, which is a fantastic album. I could put it on as soon as we finish doing this on the vinyl turntable over there.
He's the Aphex Twin. Is the Aphex Twin not as good?
he is the Aphex Twin. It's just one of them.
Is it?
Is that the album that they released on BitTorrent?
Yeah, the announcement was on BitTorrent.
Right,
yeah. It's just one guy. Yeah, it was on tour. That's right.
Right, on tour. Sorry. So that you downloaded the vinyl from tour.
Oh, I bought it. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Buying. Yeah. 2014.
It's on Spotify. So
there's only one Aphex Twin.
There is only one Aphex Twin. I'm sorry about this.
I always assumed there was two.
Yeah, a lot of people do because it's in the name. You know,
yeah. Trade Descriptions Act time.
It's a guy called Richard D. James who was born in Ireland but brought up in Cornwall.
Yeah.
If anyone's into electronic music, he probably doesn't need any introduction, but huge return to form. I really, really like it. It's a great album. It's not been a bad year for music, but this isn't a music podcast.
No. We can come back if you like.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's been a great year for open source and free software. I mean, I know we'd say this anyway, but it really feels like, you know, with the UK government switching to the ODF formats, that was a huge story.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, that's going to have a generational impact in the way that people look at formats and proprietary software. I think that's probably my Linux open source related height.
What about you, Ben?
For me...
How's your new album doing?
It's storming the charts.
What's Taylor Swift really like?
She's all right.
She goes on too many dates.
Does she?
That's what people say.
Oh. Who is she?
You've done some recording work with her. She's a popular recording artist among the youth of today.
My only knowledge of Taylor Swift is there's a Twitter account called InfoSec Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's very good.
It's no I Am Developer, but it's all right. Moment of the year. For me, at the start of the year, we were obviously forming a company and getting going, and we needed a load of infrastructure to back up our working spread out around the globe. And yeah, I've run servers and whatnot before, but this is the first time I've really set them up from scratch. And it was a sort of a moment when he sort of realised how much you can do. I mean, we were very kindly donated some servers or some virtual servers by ByteMark. But you can just go and get them, pay money, exchange for server time, and just download a load of open source software, and suddenly you've got a complete infrastructure for your business. We've got our own cloud on there for collaboration. We have emails for emailing, IRC for chatting, obviously a couple of web servers, and all that sort of stuff. And it's entirely open source. And
I think that's a good point, yeah, because we sometimes get flack for using one part of our magazine production, InDesign, for the layout, which is what our art editor uses. But absolutely everything else, we're completely open source. So organizing issues on own cloud, all our entire structure for our site and the work we do editing magazine content.
And PWIC for the analytics.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that was why you chose that rather than Google Analytics.
Yeah, I mean, it was a slightly moot thing to do in the end because at the time we were using Google Advertising, so they got everything anyway. But now we don't. We don't.
So we're not collaborating with the man?
No. No. When the revolution comes, we can say we were not collaborators.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
That is actually a really nice feeling.
Yeah.
Couldn't we just say that they made us do it, even if we were?
We don't need to now. They haven't bought us.
Yeah, that does feel good. How about you, Andrew?
I'm going to have to say the continued expansion and explosion of the Raspberry Pi. Just because I was down there last weekend and just there's so much enthusiasm. And it's everywhere. People know what it is when you talk about, when you say, oh, you know, what do you do then? So, oh, well, I've got to work on a magazine about Linux. And, oh, is that Raspberry Pi thing? You know, people, there's a brand recognition there, and it means that more people get to know about free software.
Mm.
Now, the actual hardware of it, cool as it is, I'm not too fussed, but it's the ideas that it carries with it.
Yeah, it's pretty bog-standard hardware now, I guess, isn't it, anyway? So.
Yeah, and I think it always was. I mean, the point was creating the whole kind of system surrounding it. Their education had always been the, you know, when they thought they'd sell just 10,000. Okay. You know, just to think they're on 4 million now? Something like that.
Yeah, they've passed 4 million. In many ways, it was bog standard hardware, but what I certainly hadn't come across before the Raspberry Pi, a small board with exposed GPIOs.
Mm.
It's certainly not ones that are really easy to use.
Yeah, and for those of us who'd kind of played around with an Arduino and struggled with, you know, using the processing language and then kind of loading that onto it, then to have a whole Linux PC you could SSH into and then still play with the GPIO pin.
Yeah, I mean,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, easily with Python as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we got even Vince Cable talking about the Raspberry Pi, didn't somebody say before?
Yeah, he was talking about the space, sending them into space.
Oh, there we go, yeah.
Nice.
Any more words from our lovely...
our lovely readers, in the most civilised corner of the internet, where there's no flamery or nonsense. So Philip says, maybe Highlight doesn't quite nail it, but the final breakthrough, I've read that one out.
But it was so
Jack
good.
Says the Atom editor from GitHub, just a phenomenal GUI editor that's free. And although it wasn't new this year, Ansible, client-free config management over SSH, has just changed how I provision services for the better. It made fixing Heartbleed across the fleet a breeze.
Have you tried Atom, Graham? Or
no, I haven't tried it. No, I remember it being open source and saw the screenshots. But I think it's GTK-based, which always kind of...
Okay.
Or is it a web editor?
I thought it was
just a web
on editor. The web, yeah. But I don't know. I've always meant to try it, you know.
Yeah. That's another reason why I wouldn't try it.
Father Ted says, Calibra, having always been slightly uncomfortable with my choice of a Kindle as my e-reader many moons ago, and thus leaving myself at the mercy of Amazon, this fantastic tool has allowed me to back up all my e-books and do with them whatever I want. A donation is on its way.
It is brilliant, actually. It's amazing.
Is that the thing that you tried?
Yeah, it's in the review of that e-book reader. It's the coffee machine.
Yeah.
The e-book reader that we looked at. So if you've got a Kindle, an Amazon Kindle, you just basically put in the ID number off the back into a plugin in Calibra, and it'll copy off your ebooks off your Amazon Kindle. And
is it not Calibra?
I don't know. Could be, isn't it?
I been mispronouncing it wrong all this time?
It does look like Calibra.
I don't know. It's got the Libra word in it.
So that's why. Calibra. That's what I'm going with from now on.
It's actually also what I used to arrange the EPUB version of the magazine. The scripts spit out all the HTML and they get put into the order and images inserted with Calibra or Calibra. And in some ways it does work well. In some ways it's incredibly annoying for creating stuff. Stuff like the way it handles files by putting them in a library probably makes sense for working with Kindles and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's really annoying for creating stuff. You can't sort of... It doesn't work well with like backups and stuff like that. You can't have an old version, new version, or different. You can't have different size versions very easily as well.
Mm.
Different images, resolutions. Even though it does, and the way it exports as well to different image resolutions is a bit awkward. You can't just put in the width of the screen. You want to target. You have to select a device. But the EPUB spec's a bit weird anyway.
Stuart Ward has been very impressed with the rise of OpenStack and Docker in the enterprise. Bagus Aji Santoso, or Aji Santoso, pardon me. Fedora 21 finally released right in the last month of 2014. Yes, so big that we mentioned it in the news. Jay Ressington, apart from Linux Voice, the launch of Ubuntu Mate, you can boot into it and pretend that Unity was just a horrible dream. Safe in the knowledge that things are back to normal. And Frank says, thanks to the excellent tutorial in Linux Voice, plus the Linux Voice video, I finally feel comfortable using Vim.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Second, yeah, good.
Second will be
we should
this,
do more of that.
We should, yes. As the Opera browser seems to have forsaken its Linux users and also seems to be gutting their product features I most rely on, such as the integrated mail and RSS client, discovering the versatility of Mozilla's SeaMonkey suite, also mentioned just a few short minutes ago.
It's like we know what's going to happen in the future.
Wow.
Yeah.
Divine poetry at work. How big is space?
Yes. Lovely. Lovely things there. Dale McGee, Foss, games like Civilization 5 and Borderlands 2 coming to Linux.
Yeah, of course, gaming.
Of course.
Yeah.
You people have all been too busy playing Metro games.
Last Light is also going to be released, which is a great game. I've played that.
But Goat Simulator didn't work very well on Linux. Actually, it might do now. I haven't tried a more recent version.
We just need Elite Dangerous now.
Is that out yet?
It's out for Windows, yeah.
Is it not for Linux yet?
No, it's just the Windows release this week. Oh. I must admit, I had to boot into Windows 8 for like the fourth time in my whole life just to be able to play it. God awful operating system.
You managed to find your way to the installer.
Barely. I have to click on 10 things just to shut down.
Do you become average if you can manage to log into Windows
to launch? Elite Dangerous. Yeah.
I don't think there are any specific plans for it to come to Linux either, are there? I mean,
There is no specific plans, but... Barbon did insinuate that he might.
Yeah.
Because there's an OS 10. There's going to be OS 10 in 3 months.
That was the plan.
So you'd have thought it wouldn't be that much harder to create a Linux port. And if they're going to do console versions as well, then Linux might just kind of come for free.
Yeah.
So that's definitely going to be a highlight of 2015, isn't it?
I should be, yeah. I have really enjoyed what I've played of it so far.
Can we just finish off with David? He says, Snowdrift.coop reaching its minimum funding goal was definitely my Floss highlight. Hope 2015 sees it bearing fruit. What's that?
Sorry, Snowdrift? I don't know what that is.
Site that crowdfunded itself.
And it's crowdfunding itself on Indiegogo, wasn't it?
Wow, that's brilliant.
It's supposed to be crowdfunding... in a way that's designed specifically for open content works. So for CC art and videos and that sort of thing. I'm trying to remember exactly how it's set up, but I think it's slightly different in that it's a little bit like Flutter, in that you sort of pay a certain amount and it gets distributed amongst projects depending on stuff. But I could be misremembering that.
I'm not sure about the name Snowdrift, though. I mean, given that they were launching a crowdfunding site on a crowdfunding site, they should have used a doubly recursive acronym like our friends with Herd.
So something is not Indiegogo.
Exactly. It is not, yeah. You would have loved that, Andrew. Yeah.
Plus, I just don't trust anything with a modern top-level domain. Co-op, that's not a...
It's like biz, isn't it?
Yeah, as soon as you saw a .biz, you're like,
So, is 2015 going to be the year of Linux on the desktop then? Ben?
It's on my desktop next year.
Hooray! That's that answered once and for all.
No, I'm switching to OpenBSD.
Open, not free.
Nah, OpenBSD is better.
You care about security.
No, I just like watching Theo flame everybody.
Yeah. So, back to a positive forward-linking thing on which to end the show.
That's pretty good glühwein there, Graham. I see you've got this Berlin glühwein glass.
Yeah, brought them back from Berlin.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good skills.
On that note, I'm off to have another drink, I think.
Yeah.
I think we should all have run out.
I've got some mince pie somewhere.
Ah,
bad skills.
I made my own mincemeat and I was going to bring some mince pies, but I got too drunk last night and couldn't make them.
Always the same excuse.
So that's it for us in 2014
this year.
Yeah, thank you everyone for all of your support.
Thanks for listening, thanks for reading.
Thanks for everybody who made the magazine happen. I mean, it's been a crazily busy year for us.
Yes.
Working flat out on the magazine. We are four geeks doing everything, running the business, dealing with all this tax nonsense. Well, especially you, Andrew, and Ben have looked into that. And yeah, so yeah, long may it continue for another great year ahead.
I'm looking forward to it.
Ditto. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. Have a good merry holidays.
Frohe Weihnachten. Yeah.
Hey, did you know I could play Crockett's theme on the piano?
Oh, let's finish with this.
I'm ready. There you go.